short story is a German backpacker had a bike for sale when I was 20 at a ridiculously low price. I went and offered him half of it and he refused it. I offered him half of it in a six pack and said, "We'll have a beer and you can tell me what an awful man I am." And he said yes, and I only bought it to on-sell it. And it's when I got on that bike and rode it home, and it was just for a quick sale, I felt like a kid the first time I got a push bike, when I rode down the road with the wind in my hair, and I thought I could go anywhere. 3 months later, it was suggested to me that I should go and get my license.
Hello, I'm Anne Jones with Off Track on RN. I was out in the bush with my recording equipment down a fire trail trying to get some bird calls a while back, and through the headphones I could hear this. I was right near the Royal National Park, south of Sydney, but not within the bounds, and the man... I say a man because I think it was a man, though he had all of that motorbike gear on, so it's a bit hard to tell. He slowed right down and he waved as he turned around to take a different track. Now, all I could see was the bottom of his face, and he had this huge grin on his grill. I thought, well, wait a second, why was he smiling like that? What am I missing out on? Christopher Burns is the chair of the Dirt Bike Subcommittee for the Motorcycle Council of New South Wales. He's been riding since he was a young man.
Dirt bikes are a sub-tribe of the motorcycle riding group. It's split up into a number of people. There are the enduro riders who ride registered bikes in state forests on gazetted roads. There are the motocross riders who go down to motocross parks and go over lots of lumps and bumps in a very short circuit. There are the ADV riders who get on large big bore bikes and do the things like long way round, travelling through the desert in Australia. And then we've got people who are illegal riding unregistered trail bikes, unlicensed, and then we've got the pit bike riders on cheap Chinese bikes who annoy everybody.
Which section do you fall into?
I'm an adventure rider on one bike and a registered enduro rider on another bike. So I ride forest trails and open dirt highways and deserts. The Australian bush is an amazing place. So many people sit at home and spend their days watching reality TV shows, when if they just got out in a push bike or a car and went for a drive and had a look at the beauty of this country. I've spent 30 years travelling this country and I haven't seen it all. I've been over to Europe, a whole lot of places, but nothing beats big sky country out west. Being out, you know, near the Simpson Desert with the big red dunes and massive stars, the bush, the sound of magpies. I don't know. How do you explain it? I was working in Taipei once and I was in a national park there and I was with some Taiwanese engineers and I called them over. I saw a eucalyptus tree. I called them over and I took two leaves off the tree. I crushed them in my fingers and I said, "That's what my country smells like." How do you put a finger on something that's yours and it's that you love? I don't know.
But the thing is, you could have some of these experiences by riding a horse. So what is it about the bikes in particular that has clearly drawn you right into the depths of this experience?
Having owned a horse between the ages of 18 and 21 and ridden competition horse riding events between the ages of 14 to 18, horses are a lot of work. Especially in Sydney. I used to muck the stables out in the morning, get the horse into the yard, exercise the horse, muck the yard out in the afternoon, exercise the horse again, get it back in the stables, feed it 365 days of the year. I can park my motorbike in the garage, go overseas for 2 months, come back, look at the odometer and know that no one's ridden it and it hasn't gotten sick while I was away. I love horses. I love horse riding. But this is so much easier. I've also injured my knee, so that makes it difficult to go bushwalking. And you know, I've spent a lot of time abseiling, canyoning, and then I've done my knee, so that basically leaves the trail bike as the only option for me now.
Christopher Burns mentioned his partner Ange there. Her name is Angie May. She's also a writer.
When I was 9 years old, my mum and dad bought me a bike and bought my brother a bike as well. And we started riding around Kurnell in the sand dunes when that was still possible. So we were camping and it was a great family activity. We just couldn't wait to get out there. My mum and dad didn't have a bike at that time, but they used to play around on ours as well. And it was really great. Now, I gave up riding for many, many years and then wanted to get back into riding when I met Chris. He was a rider and we decided to go out riding in the bush as well. I do some trail riding, single track trail riding, but I also really enjoy doing the deserts and outback tours. We've been on a couple of trips on our bikes where we pack up our camping gear and go out and spend days out in the desert and out in the bush, and it's a really terrific way to see the country.
Can I just add to that that riding bikes is a great leveller? Ange walked in to Innamincka Hotel, which is out in the desert, miles from anywhere. It was full of blokes. And the first thing they said was, "Oh, who are you on the back of?" And Ange looked them in the eye and said, "I rode my own bike, thank you very much." Nobody cares what you do for a living. They're interested in what you ride.
But what about the legalities? We're talking dirt bikes at the moment, the two-wheelers with the big bumpy tyres that are used for grip in rougher terrain. Now, keep in mind that Christopher Burns is from the MCC, the Motorcycle Council of New South Wales, and he's talking about his home state here.
If you're riding on private property, you need the owner's permission, or it's your own private property, or you go to a site-specific area for riding off gazetted roads, places like Luwee, which is a motocross park. There's a new one opened down near Nowra. Apart from that, you have to be registered, licensed, and stay on a gazetted road. So if you're in a state forest, you stay on a gazetted road, much like a four-wheel drive, any other vehicle. Licensed, insured, and registered.
So does everyone follow those rules?
Unfortunately, no. The CTP component for registration in New South Wales is exorbitant. We're talking over $500 for a 250cc bike. A lot of people don't see the benefit of paying that when they're only riding once a month in the state forest.
The CTP is compulsory third-party insurance. The MCC, the Motorcycle Council of New South Wales, has the position that it's so expensive that it's prohibiting people from registering their motorbikes, and instead they prefer to take the risk of riding illegally.
What the MCC has been working on for a number of years is trying to introduce recreational registration, which gets something in the region of 80,000 unregistered bikes. It gives them a cheap option. It gets them into the system, contributing to the insurance system. It gets a rego plate on the back of their bike and they can then ride legally. So recreational registration is first and foremost a new class of registration. This isn't about open slather in the state forests, not giving riders carte blanche to ride anywhere. It's a different class of registration, very much similar to the Victorian Rec Rego, where you are stuck to non-blacktop roads, dirt roads. You float your bike in, you float your bike out. Oh, sorry, trailer your bike in, trailer your bike out. And most people do that anyway with their dirt bikes.
Why do you do that? Because I've often seen that when you're out on the highway and you see someone going somewhere with their bikes. And I think, why don't they ride them there?
What if you break it? How do you get home? we're talking $12,000, $15,000 worth of bike as well with small oil capacity. These bikes are not designed to ride on freeways and highways. If we go up to the Wadigans for a ride, for a day ride, we're talking about 80 k's on bitumen, freeway bitumen. It's not good for the bike. So we trailer it up there. We go for a ride in the dirt. We put it back in the trailer. We come home. We wash them. Because firstly, we're proud of our bikes and it holds a resale value. And secondly, you don't want to transfer any form of weeds, anything else that comes from the Wadigans down to, say, Belanglo State Forest. We even have a program running where we're out spotting weeds and reporting them to the appropriate authorities if we see them. So we take all that into account as much as we can.
Do you think that this potential recreational registration would bring some of those 80,000 unregistered motorbike riders, dirt bike riders out there into the responsible fold?
No doubt about it. When they introduced it down in Victoria, they got 40,000 riders on the system in 3 years. This is people that weren't paying into the system before. They weren't insured. If I get hit by some deal coming the other way, I want to be covered by CTP insurance. That's pure and simple.
Victoria and Tasmania have recreational registration for dirt bikes, and that means at this stage that you're limited when you have that registration to certain types of roads and certain areas. Vic Roads told me that they currently have just over 31,500 recreational motorbikes registered in the state. Now, the registration issue is being pushed in other states by user groups, as you can imagine, but that is a different issue to off-road access. On RN, you're listening to Off Track. We'll hear more from Christopher Burns and Angie May in a couple of minutes, but first, let's go north, onto the tablelands west of Cairns, to hear about the experience of a different sort of rider, a quad bike rider, those big four-wheelers. In Queensland, these are not able to be registered as other vehicles can be for use on roads. Normally, the quad bike riders have to ride on private property where they have the landowner's permission. But there is a group which would like to ride on state-owned land in national parks and state forests. Anne Arnold from Background Briefing prepared this report for Off Track.
Move that little branch out of the way. It'll get easier to get to the big one, yeah?
How's that?
In a national park forest near Atherton on the Tablelands west of Cairns, a group of quad bike riders are hard at work.
I'm surprised to want to move this log, you know. We thought we got it all locked up properly.
Bigger than it looked.
Yeah. All right, that'll do. Back out.
The Far North Quad Riders Club has an agreement with National Parks Management to do track maintenance. And in return, they get access to some great trails.
This is the beginning of the link track. Our club has a collaborative agreement with the National Parks to maintain it for the general forest user community. The quads have the capabilities to tow in 500 kilo trailers, carry chainsaws, tools, whatever we need. What's happening is that these old logging trails, the original pipe drains, which are made from trees with hollow logs, are rotting away, and so the drains are all collapsing, and that's causing a problem. So from the rainforest, which is just over the next little hill, that's our territory.
The FN Quad Riders have a mission stated clearly on their website. They're pushing for registration of quad bikes so that they can then more freely access national parks and other public areas. In the US, this is what the huge number of recreational quad bike or ATV, all-terrain vehicle riders, are able to do.
Probably one of the best things we've got up here in North Queensland is with so many mining trails and logging trails, there's a lot of variety and we haven't got the huge population, so we can see a lot of different country.
Colin Lawson sells quad bikes and also runs adventure tours. He's a co-founder of the FN Quad Riders.
If we're on the east side of the range, we've got rainforest and creeks, and we go to the west side, we've got a different sort of creek and dry country and more mine sites. Awful lot of rock formations, and it's a variety that we really like up here. We don't want to be riding just on specifically made racetracks and small properties doing small loops. We want to be exploring and experiencing different country all the time. And that's what we're really interested in. It's not just the riding. It's we all enjoy the riding, but we also enjoy the landscapes that we see and discover. It's a big part of it.
The club held a meeting in the old timber pub at Pyramin, southeast of Atherton.
About a drink or something?
Tim Forsyth is the club president. His group is adamant that they offer benefits to other national park users.
We do pull some four-wheel drive wrecks out of wet tropic rainforest trails that no one else can get them out, and like this horse trail that the horses can't deal with it. We're doing that for them as well. So, yeah, we hope to use the trails ourselves as we want. We don't have a footprint that a horse or a motorbike has, but this particular trail is part of a link that we're trying to get Mareeba and right through to Mount Hypipimi Crater, which is a natural gem of the region. At the moment, you can only get to that crater by driving a car, which seems a bit strange that you can't walk there or ride a push bike there or whatever. So the roads are all there. They're old roads or old logging tracks, so we're not trying to do anything more than just cut a small path through the rainforest. But it's all part of the tourism thing that the Atherton or the Tablelands Regional Council's trying to promote, and we need connectivity of our trails, and we have 150 years of mining trails and gold mines in strange places, so there's some excellent stuff out there to go see.
The Far North quad bikers see themselves as not just responsible citizens, they go above and beyond. There's a long list of local activities that they help out with in the region, including cyclone recovery work and the Butchers Creek cross-country race.
So it's like the kids do their annual cross-country race out at a little tiny one-teacher school called Butchers Creek, which is a delightful place. It's right on the edge of some beautiful wet tropics forest. And so all the primary schools in the district go there for their annual race. And we run the quads out. The SES are there with their trucks and what have you, but the quads can follow the kids behind. If a kid twists an ankle, we can pop them on the back and get them to the SES for first aid. Oh, yes. The mountain bike guys from Innisfail have asked us again to help out in the forest for them, doing the first aid and the water drop-offs for their mountain bike run. This is an outing. It's not a race. It's just a social ride for them through some really specky forest. They've asked for us to have two quads running up the Gola, is that the right pronouncer? Gola track, which runs from the back of Innisfail up into the Misty Mountains where the campground is, about halfway up, you know, where the possum bridges are. I think if people realise what the trail is you're riding on it, there'll be a lot more people wanting to be one of those two quads.
Club President Tim Forsyth. For the FN quad riders, riding is an art form. Just ask the Landers, young Nathan and Taylor, and their parents Ken and Wendy.
Yes, I love riding for lots of reasons. It's a great way to see the outdoors, the bush, explore, get to old mine sites that you can't get to in four-wheel drives because the tracks are all washed out. And also for the adrenaline occasionally.
Despite the fact that large coronial inquests in Queensland and New South Wales are currently looking into quad bike-related deaths, including children, the Landers believe that if children are taught well, there's not an unreasonable risk.
When we're going on rides, we either have a family ride where all four of us ride, or we get them babysat with grandparents usually and we go for an adult ride.
So when all four of you ride, where are the boys?
They each have their own bike, so we do camp rides, do a lot of exploring. Any riding that they do is always supervised. Basically what we've done with the boys is set them up on their bikes, and before they're allowed to go anywhere, they have to have all their safety gear on. They need to know what to do, how to do.
They check their bikes over and they clean them when they're finished. So that's not just the riding they do. They learn the whole lot. And we spent a lot of time teaching him to do that. And I think their favourite thing is going to old mine sites and fossicking for bits and pieces. So we'll normally ride in, say, 40-minute to hour intervals. We find that they get tired if they ride much longer than that, and that's when accidents start happening, and they both know it's not fun if they're having issues. So small rides are better when they're not tired.
And what do they ride?
Nathan's on a little 50 and Taylor's on a 90cc quad bike.
Taylor, now that you are how old?
Seven.
And a half.
And Nathan, who's nearly asleep, is five, is that right?
Yeah, you're five, aren't you?
Mm.
Yeah.
Taylor, what's your favourite thing about going for a ride? Do you like the noise? Do you like the speed? Do you like bumps?
I like the bumps lots.
Do you like doing donuts, boys?
Yes, that's definitely.
But it teaches them how to control the bike, how to steer the bike, and how to shift their weight, which is really important. So we've taught them both how to do donuts. Nathan here was doing power slides on his own, and I said to him, I said, Nathan, I think you're ready to learn how to do a donut. He said, I don't know how to do one. And I said, I think you can. So we got him doing one, turning sharply, a little bit of throttle, and he started doing it easily. He's very happy with himself.
Ken Lander. These quad riders want, for the time being, a special category of conditional rego for off-road riding in public places. Otherwise, quad riders will continue to go to places without permission. Ghosts of the forest, as Tim Forsyth says.
Yeah, this came about a couple of years ago when the park manager said, well, how do you know that's in there? And I just said, well, just think of us as the ghosts of the forest. We're there all the time, but we make sure you don't see us because we're stuck. We love the forest. We realise that four-wheel drives aren't the vehicle for the forest. There's too much road maintenance needed for them. Trail bikes, some of us are a bit too battered to ride them anymore. Some of us still do ride them. But the quad, you can still have the adventure type fun on a quad, but you pull up at lunchtime and you've got, I've even taken along cooking gear and made my lunch, and there's always hot coffee and cheesecake. We've pulled up in the middle of the way, middle of nowhere, pulled out cheesecake. So you just get that nicer level of comfort, which is great. The other thing we're finding is a few of us are building trailers now, and we're hoping to be able to remote support ourselves for 5 days, and then we can really start exploring some of the magic that's up on the top end up here. We just get away.
Reporting from the Atherton Tablelands. The Far North Queensland quad bike riders are arguing for more access to national parks, but at this stage the club members are only allowed in legally when they're undertaking the agreed upon trail maintenance. Also, just in case you needed more information, I've included a link on the website to the recent background briefing on the safety of quad bikes that Anne Arnold produced. It's definitely worth a listen. And now, back to motorbikes of the two-wheeled variety and our two guests, Christopher Burns and Angie May. Why? Why do you do this? This sounds like a lot of trouble. You got to float your bike in, you're saying you're trailering out somewhere, then you know there's potential for it to break, it's expensive, the registration's expensive. Angie, what are you doing?
It's a great lot of fun, and it's a really, really great way to see the countryside and to see the bush. You know, there's a lot of people who think we're actually out there trying to damage the bush, but that's not the case. We're actually going to many places that most people don't go to, purely because we've got the wheels to get there. And it's absolutely amazing, some of the countryside that you see when you go out to these places. If there's a register of people who do go out to these places, there's weed spotting programs already. If there was a Rec Rego register of people who do that, those sorts of programs could be elaborated. They could, you know, a lot of people would be really interested in bush regeneration, for example. Not all of them, of course, but there would be certain pockets of the population who would be.
What's it like when you're out in the bush somewhere and you see a rider doing something illegal? What happens then?
Everything you ever read about riding in any of the reports from forestry or any of the submissions from the private groups is illegal trail riding, illegal trail riding, illegal trail riding. And all I see is more work for me when someone's doing the wrong thing. It's really simple. Get registered, get insured, keep a quiet pipe on your bike. We're not doing anything different than mountain bike riders are doing. Mountain bike riders are slipping into traditional areas that used to be dirt bike riding areas. The only thing is they're doing it quietly and no one complains about the noise.
Christopher, I have to ask you as well, how did it all begin? Was your family a bike riding family?
Far from it. My mother, from being an opera singer, was also a registered nurse at Bathurst. And during Bathurst bike races, she told me all the horror stories when I grew up about motorcycles. My father owned a Matchless when he was a young man, but didn't have one later. I did a bit of mucking around on trail bikes down at the local tip illegally when it wasn't so much frowned upon when I was 12 or 13. But the short story is a German backpacker had a bike for sale when I was 20 at a ridiculously low price. I went and offered him half of it. And he refused it. I offered him half of it in a six pack and said, "We'll have a beer and you can tell me what an awful man I am." And he said yes. And I only bought it to on-sell it. And 3 months later, it was suggested to me that I should go and get my license, which I did. And I've been passionately involved with motorcycles ever since. When I got on that bike and rode it home, and it was just for a quick sale, I felt like a kid the first time I got a push bike, when I rode down the road with the wind in my hair and I thought I could go anywhere. How do you explain that? You know, that sense of freedom, that little point of difference from the rest of everyone sitting in their cages playing with their iPhones and their phones. It's, as Ange said earlier, you see it, you smell it, you feel it. When it rains on you, you get wet. When it's hot, you get hot. One of my favourite photos of Ange is from when we rode around Cambodia and we took the helmets off and she had this massive big dirt moustache down the front of her face, this big red moustache and this big white cheesy grin showing out from underneath it and a beer in her hand. We did 2,500 kilometres around there and we rode places that you couldn't get to in regular vehicles, broken bridges, really thin trails between minefields. It was one of the best holidays I've ever had. The sense of freedom is you either love it or you hate it. I love it.
I think there's still plenty to talk about with this topic, including, say, the sorts of interactions that motorbike riders might have with bushwalkers or horse riders when they're in the forest, and what sort of effect all of these activities have on the environment. And if you keep on listening to Off Track in the coming weeks, I'll keep on asking that sort of question, and hopefully at the end of it all, we'll have a better understanding of our collective relationship to the world. I'm Ann Jones. You're listening to RN. This is Off Track, and it was a real pleasure to be speaking with you this week. And remember to tune in at the same time next week. That's when I'll take you somewhere else.